And joining me now on the phone, as promised, Stephen Cree, who plays Outlander's Ian Murray. Ian Murray is, of course, the husband of Jamie's sister, Jenny. Stephen, thank you for joining us on the show.
Pleasure, Ross. Nice to be here.
Now, Outlander fans are going wild with anticipation for tomorrow's season finale.
Yes.
Did you expect the series to be this popular?
Do you know, I remember having a conversation with Katrina Balf when we were filming season one, and we were sitting round in between one of the scenes, and just pondering how it may be received. And I thought you never know really how anything's going to turn out. Mm-hmm. But I thought the one thing it had hugely, obviously, in its favour is that it had an absolutely enormous readership, and I think it sold like 20 million books worldwide. So it was obviously going to have those fans for a start. And also, when you look at the success of period shows like Downton Abbey,
yes,
abroad, and in the last few years, the obvious one that Outlander kept getting compared to initially, although I think it's nothing like it really.
Game of Thrones. Yeah.
Just in terms of the scope and the size of it. But when I was on set on Outlander, because I didn't know anything about the books before I got involved, and when I was on set and when I was up there, I was pretty, being completely honest, I was pretty positive that it was going to be really well received. And I thought it would go down, really, really well. I don't know if I realised it would be quite, you know, it's obviously been a massive success. Mm-hmm. So it's difficult to necessarily predict that, but I certainly thought it was going to be very popular. Yeah.
And it's also been very good for the Scottish film industry as well.
Completely. I think, you know, obviously there's been talk in the last few years about building a studio,
yeah,
you know, for it. And obviously there's a, you know, they've been talking about doing that in Glasgow, or a little bit nearer to Glasgow. And I know there's been a couple of, propositions put forward, but there's obviously the film studios there in Cumbernauld now, which Outlander have built, which are absolutely huge. And I think regardless of what happens in terms of if they decide to just use that as their base.
Well, that's what I've been hearing. I live in Cumbernauld, and yeah, that's what was reported recently. I'm sure I read that they're throwing more money into that studio to expand it.
I read that as well. And I've heard different things about it, because my wife is actually industry as well, and she knows a little bit more about it than me. So I've heard like various different reports. I don't know exactly which stage they're at right now. Although I think they expanded the studios that Outlander use, and I don't know if that's obviously for the purposes of Outlander right now. What will happen once Outlander moves on? But Cumbernauld seems like a pretty good base. You know, it's only 40 minutes from Glasgow. It's not that far from Edinburgh either. So in that sense, it's pretty well situated. Either way, the fact that they filmed such a huge production as Outlander in Scotland, I think, is only positive and only beneficial moving forward anyway, especially when you compare to the fact that Braveheart, for the most part, was filmed in Ireland.
That's right.
And from what I understand, they actually filmed the Game of Thrones pilot in Scotland and then moved it to Ireland because at that point, I think the tax breaks were better in Ireland.
That's
or something.
Right, yes. I remember hearing that.
You know, in that sense, and I think that's what one of the most incredible things about Outlander in season one was, that the scenery in Scotland is like one of the most important characters in the show, I think. And I've actually never seen, I can't think of anything I've seen that has captured Scotland so well or made Scotland look so beautiful on screen. And of course, actually, the most stunning place that Outlander filmed in of all, Kilmarnock.
Well, that's where you're from, isn't it?
That's where I'm from, indeed. And unfortunately, you know, very weird how this worked out. They filmed in Mauchline the year before, and Mauchline is a little village about 15 minutes. In fact, it's about 10 miles, but 15 minutes from Kilmarnock. And when my mum and dad separated when I was a kid, my dad moved to Mauchline and my mum stayed in Kilmarnock. So I split my time between Kilmarnock and Mauchline.
Wow.
And there was a place in Mauchline where every weekend, well, not every weekend, but a lot of weekends, called the the something estate. It's where they filmed, and there was a river down there that my brother and I used to go fishing in.
Mm-hmm.
And in the season one, when we're all going on a horse ride and just before we get ambushed, we actually filmed right by the river. And as I could remember it, I think right by the exact spot, pretty much, that I used to fish in when I was a kid.
Oh, wow.
When I was about 9 or 10 years old. In Mauchlin, if anyone from Scotland is listening as well, or anyone knows, Mauchlin's quite, you know, it's not necessarily the type of place you would associate with filming happening.
Right.
So of all the places, the Bar Skimming Estate, that's what it's called. It's where they do horse trials, I think. And of all the places to have ended up filming in.
That's incredible.
It was so weird. And then, of course, last year, they filmed at the Dean Castle in Kilmarnock, which, unfortunately, I wasn't involved in the filming of that. But I always say to anyone who slags Kilmarnock off, particularly after the scheme, which I think gave it a really bad name, Kilmarnock's actually a great town, and a great town to grow up in. And the Dean Castle Country Park is an absolutely cracking big park, and the Dean Castle's a fantastic castle. So I thought it was very, very cool that they decided to film there as well.
Well, a lot of the locations now are popular with tourists from all over the world because of Outlander. Mm. So hopefully the tourists will visit Kilmarnock as well. And the reaction from the fans, Stephen, what's it been like for you? You're not on Twitter, but you're on Facebook, and you also you go to some of the events, don't you?
What have I been to so far? I went to one thing last year, but it wasn't really an Outlander thing. It was like a convention at Milton Keynes, and that was the first taste I got of actually meeting Outlander fans face to face, and they were really, really nice, really friendly, really sweet. There were a few who were talking about the fan clubs that had started, like the Hooligans and the Catriots or something. What's the one for Katrina? I can't remember. And
every character seems to have a sort of fan club.
Yeah. So they were trying to get me. They were trying to get me to go onto Twitter, but I've still neglected to go onto it yet. But I think I jokingly said something like, "If you start a fan club for me, then I'll join Twitter." And actually, they went ahead and did start a Twitter.
Just looking, sure. Yeah, I saw something the other day that I'm sure they're following me on Twitter.
The Creasies.
The Creasies, that's...
Creasies.
So they've kept their side of the bargain. Are you going to keep yours, or are you going to join Twitter?
I haven't yet. And it's not like I may well do at some point. I more want to join Twitter, though, because I was reading an article the other day that this guy, Richard Littlejohn...
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know the guy,
who writes for the Daily Mail and used to write for The Sun.
Controversial guy.
He's I would say an absolute dick.
I was putting it politely, but a lot of people say that, yeah.
And I thought about joining Twitter that day just because I wanted to tweet him,
mm-hmm.
And tell him what a dick he was. But I'll just say it here instead.
One of the many uses of Twitter, you can tell somebody they're a dick.
Well, that's one of the things I think it might be useful for. But then actually, if you tweet somebody and you just call them a dick, you're probably not going to get a response. I imagine you're going to have to be a little bit more clever about it than that.
Well, he probably gets it all the time anyway, doesn't he?
Well, exactly. So you're going to have to draw him in with some compliments probably at first.
Yeah, just to surprise him and catch his attention, because he won't be used to that.
Absolutely. Catch him unawares and then fire in some abuse. But actually... You know, he clearly writes some of that stuff knowing that he's going to get that reaction anyway. So, look, there are definitely some cool things to come from Twitter. Sam Hugh, and also, you know, we went to a Motley... I've completely got the name of the band wrong now. I was about to say Motley Crue, and it's definitely not Motley Crue. that would probably... Megadeth.
Oh, yes.
Megadeth. We went to a Megadeth concert last year because Sam got friendly with the lead singer from Megadeth via Twitter. And actually, you know the actor Gary Lamont from River City.
Yes, of course.
Gary is very friendly with Judy Murray, Andy Murray's mum.
That's right, yeah.
Judy Murray is a massive River City fan.
That's right.
I am a massive Andy Murray fan and a big tennis fan, but I've been a huge supporter of Andy Murray since he came on the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And I have sometimes thought maybe I should get on Twitter and try and somehow, you know, and try and get Andy Murray to watch Outlander or something like that, since I also play Ian Murray. Another connection there, maybe I could befriend Andy or something. But
maybe he's already a fan.
Maybe he is. I mean, who knows?
Or his mum.
Who knows? Maybe his mum is. I mean, he's a proud Scot, so who knows? But
we'll get to the bottom of that. We'll find out. We shall soon find out, because everybody, as soon as they hear this, are going to be tweeting Andy Murray, asking him if he watches Outlander.
I think that's a good idea. Get on it.
Now, we've got some callers lined up with some questions. Okay. I'm going to bring them in. Three callers from the States, actually, today.
Okay.
On the line, we have Jackie in Southern California. You're on the air with Stephen Cree, Jackie.
Hi, Stephen.
Hey, Jackie. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Whereabouts in Southern California are you?
I'm in the middle of the Mojave Desert next to Edwards Air Force Base. It's an hour and a half northeast of Los Angeles.
Northeast. You know where the Six Flags theme park is?
Yes.
Is that past there? Is that that direction?
It is. It's just a little farther east than that.
Ah, okay, right. I kind of know where you are then. I've been to LA a few times, and I've been to the Six Flags theme park a couple of times.
Yeah, it's just down the road from us. Not too bad.
Okay, cool.
Now, Jacqueline, you have a question for Stephen?
I do. I read in an interview that you did with Scotland Now, and you said Ian Murray's wooden leg caused a lot of off-camera comedy. So I was wondering if you'd be willing to share one of those stories with us.
There was one time that there were just like there were kind of various incidents or times where, you know, we would be doing a scene and then the scene would finish and we would be walking into another room and, you know, the other actors would turn around and find that I was either about 15 yards behind them. Or when we were outside in the courtyard, my wooden leg had caught in the mud and I still actually hadn't moved. But there was one time in particular, if you remember the scene from season one, when Macquarie has just shown up and Jamie stroke Sam is furious and we all go into the kitchen and Jenny, Claire and Jamie and me have all gone into the kitchen and Jenny starts chopping up some vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we kind of went into the kitchen quite fast. And the first time I did it, I had to kind of run on that wooden leg up the concrete steps and then into the kitchen. And basically I ran up the concrete steps, slipped on the concrete floor. My wooden leg came flying off, knocked over a big kind of tub of cabbages, which for some reason made it even funnier. And I still valiantly tried to push on with the scene, but I turned around and Katrina had absolutely lost her shit. So we had to start again. Oh. Well, not least of which, because my wooden leg wasn't on it anymore as well.
Now we want to see the outtakes. We want to see the bloopers, the blooper reel.
There are outtakes, aren't there? I don't know if that one was on it, actually. It should have been, but
Jackie, does that answer your question?
It does, thank you.
Thank you very much for hanging on the line and thanks for calling in. Much appreciate your time.
Bye, Jackie.
Thank you, bye.
Bye, Jackie.
Sure.
Bye.
Now, just talking about your leg, Stephen, was that CGI?
Yeah. Well, the wooden leg.
For the peg leg?
The peg leg itself wasn't CGI. The peg leg was an actual peg leg, but what they did was my knee rested in a little knee rest bit, and they built a little kind of ledge coming off the wooden leg where I could rest the top of my shin on. So my leg wasn't tied right up behind me. It was kind of resting on this little shelf, and I wore a green sock over it. So they would CGI out any of the green.
That's incredible.
So It was fantastic. It was great, and it was actually It was much better, even though it was very painful at first, and it took a wee while to get used to. It was better doing it like that as well. Although actually, last November when we were filming, it was the first time we filmed. It was in the summer, and by Scottish standards, it was actually really warm. But last November, it was bloody cold. So hobbling about outside with just a very thin green tight on wasn't quite as fun.
I've been very impressed with the CGI in the show. Colm's legs, yeah. As some of the listeners already know, I live in Cumbernauld and I occasionally do background work on Outlander.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, I've done about 8 episodes or something. And yeah. So I remember asking one of the girls, you know, one of the crew, how do they do that to his legs, you know? And she said, it's CGI. I went, you're joking. Yeah. That's incredible. And then one of the scenes we had to do was in the car park at the studio, and they had painted the car park green. And put up this big green screen as well behind us, and it was for a scene where the boat comes in. It was just a distant shot, you know.
Right. Yeah.
It's incredible. The CGI, isn't it?
No, it's fantastic. And I think Gary Lewis, had a harder job than me in a way. In that sense, I didn't do any stuff with Gary, but he was saying that he basically green socks over both his legs. And just had to adopt this like awkward style of walking, as if, you know, which I think might have been harder to do actually, because even though that wooden leg was quite painful and awkward at first, at least I had an actual, you know, wooden stump to be working with.
Yeah,
you know,
and Gary had to walk like
Gary just had to
pretend he'd lost his donkey.
Essentially, exactly.
Pretend he'd lost his horse.
Maybe that's how he practiced. I don't know.
We're going to take another caller. This time we are going to Washington, D.C.
Okay.
Rachel, are you there?
Hi, Stephen.
Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Ross.
Rachel, you're on the air with Stephen Cree.
Hello.
Hi, Rachel. How are you?
This is, you know, highlight of my day.
Great. You have a question?
I do. What I'd love to know is, when you're not filming or working, what's your favorite hobby or pastime?
Drinking coffee. That's what my brother would say when I'm not working. What's my favorite hobby? When I'm not working, I go to the gym quite a lot. I'm quite into keeping fit. So I guess keeping fit is, one of my favorite hobbies. I play football quite a lot as well. But I guess like if it was something like I really enjoy doing and I went as like a hobby, music, I love going to see a musical. So are you a fan of musicals?
I am. I used to actually act when I was younger, a long time ago.
What's your favorite musical?
My favorite one at the time was Pippin.
Oh yeah, right, okay. I worked with David Hasselhoff. David Hasselhoff last year, and I'm sure he was telling me that he was in discussions to do Pippin.
Yeah.
I don't know Pippin very well. Is that about a circus?
It's about a lot of things.
Right. Maybe I've got that wrong then. That's one of the ones I don't know so well.
Yeah. And then, you know, I'd also love to know, what would be your dream role?
My dream role. Right. Well, when I was a kid, actually, when I was at school, when I was at high school, as you call it, I did Carousel. You know the musical Carousel? And I played Billy Bigelow, who is the lead character in that. And when I was younger, I kind of always wanted, I always thought I would love to play Billy Bigelow in Carousel. But actually, I saw a production of Carousel a few years ago, and Carousel actually doesn't date very well. It's a little bit, you know, it's kind of about this guy who essentially is a wife beater, but then relents and everyone forgives him and it kind of celebrates him by the end. So I don't know if that works so well these days, maybe in the 50s or 60s. I absolutely love, there's a play called All My Sons by Arthur Miller. And I saw it on Broadway actually a few years ago with, you know who Patrick Wilson is? who actually, Patrick Wilson, incidentally, is an absolutely amazing singer and has done a few musicals. And he played Chris in All My Sons with John Lithgow. It's an, I think I said it's an Arthur Miller play. That's I love the play and I love that part. So I would love to play that one day, actually.
Very cool. Maybe it'll happen.
Maybe it'll happen. And also, if there was some way of traveling back in time, I'd like to play Andy Murray, but I'm a bit too old for that now, so.
Well, you never know that. You just don't know. CGI.
So, if they could CGI, make me look a bit younger, maybe. I don't know. About 5 inches taller.
Special effects can do a lot these days.
They can. They can.
Does that answer your questions, Rachel?
That does. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for calling in.
All right, have a great day.
You too.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye, Rachel.
Bye-bye.
That was Rachel in Washington, D.C. And we're going to go straight into the third caller. We're going to go to South Jersey this time. And we're going to speak to Christine. Isn't technology marvellous that we can
it's
do this?
It's incredible. It's incredible. I'm sitting in my bedroom in London beside my cat and we're speaking to people in America.
And Cumbernauld.
And Cumbernauld, it's pretty incredible.
Now, I think we've got Christine on the line. Christine, are you with us?
How are you? I'm here.
Hi, Christine in South Jersey. You're on the air with Stephen Cree. Fire away with your question.
Hi, Stephen. How are you? Thanks so much for taking my question.
Hey, Christine. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I guess my question is about like how you prepare for each role. I know I've heard that you read the book Outlander for your role as Ian.
Yeah.
Do you have to do more research about it, since it's a period piece, than just learning your lines and reading the book about what your character's like? Does the period piece add more to what you have to do?
I don't know if it necessarily adds more to the role. I mean, like for Outlander, you know, I got the part, and you know, when it's, I guess I felt a different kind of responsibility with Outlander than I had for other stuff before. Like if it was a TV show that wasn't based on a book, or that it was just like a new TV show, it would be a different scenario. But because I knew that Outlander had such a huge following, I wanted to try and be true to those fans and try and capture the essence of Ian Murray as he was in the book. So from that point, because it doesn't actually, you know, I don't think you necessarily have to read the book, but when I did a show called, a musical called Cabaret about 9 years ago. And right, before I did that, I read the book that the show was based on by Christopher Isherwood called Goodbye to Berlin. And reading the book informed me about the world that the character was in at that point, you know, 1930s Berlin. Uh-huh. And it just helped me kind of picture it in my head, I think, and it helped me kind of flesh the character out more as well. And similarly with Outlander, I think that was the same thing. Reading the book helped me kind of imagine, I mean, even though I'm Scottish, I wasn't around, obviously, in the 18th century, and it helped me picture the world and picture the characters. And it gave me a sense of the kind of guy that Ian is.
Did you read the novella Virgins?
No, but you know what? Laura Donnelly actually just told me about this the other day.
Yeah, it explains what happened to Ian and Jamie as young mercenaries in France.
They should definitely do a spin-off of that, and I can...
definitely.
You know,
I read that book too.
What age is Ian in the book?
Very young. I think like 22 or 24.
I can, with a very close shave, I can play 22, no problem.
Absolutely. You can probably do anything.
So
you look like a young Andy Murray.
Yeah. And I'll have both my legs as well, so that'll be good.
Absolutely.
So I just, you know, and I got the wooden leg before we started filming as well. I had it down in my house for a couple of weeks to try and practice walking about on that. But I think every part...
Were you sore after that? I mean, after with the wooden leg? I mean, was that... How did that...
Well, practicing in my house in London, it was actually really easy. But at that point, I had a I had wooden floorboards, so it was quite easy walking about on that. But also, my living room wasn't very big. The reality of doing it for the first time in that courtyard,
mud
in Lallybroch with mud, and trying to weirdly sometimes when you've got a suddenly having to speak as well and walk with that on at the same time and do it was
multitasking,
quite tricky.
Yeah,
multitasking, exactly. But it very quickly went from being like, I genuinely thought, the first couple of days I thought, I'm not sure how I'm going to be able to do this actually for the entirety of filming, to it just became very natural.
Great.
There we go. Does it answer your questions, Christine?
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
No worries.
Thank you for taking the time to call in, Christine, and have a nice rest of the day. Thanks again.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye now. Christine there in South Jersey. Thanks to my three callers. We have loads of people on Twitter and Facebook been sending in questions as well. But I want to ask you, did you do the Actors Boot Camp?
The Actors Boot Camp?
Yeah, some of the actors went to boot camp to learn how to ride horses and hold weapons and things like that.
No, that was probably like the likes of the Grant and that maybe before, like,
yes,
before it started. I didn't get cast until halfway through season one was already filming.
Well, so actually, let's go back to the very beginning then. How did you land the role as Ian Murray? Did you audition? Because Grant O'Rourke had a very unusual situation where he just sent in his tape and basically got the part from his tape, his audition tape. It wasn't even an audition, it was just his tape in.
That's kind of, these days that actually is quite often how it happens,
right?
Because things are kind of so global now, you don't necessarily meet the director or the producer all the time. Obviously, in the sense of like when they were cast, it depends what role they're casting. When they're casting roles like Jamie and Claire and stuff, it would have been a different ball game
because they're very specific.
Yeah, completely. And they're so, you've got to get, it's just, they're carrying the show the whole time. It's just, such a massive decision, I guess. But once the show was up and running as well, it's, I suppose it just depends on time and if I don't know if the producers or the directors or whatever, they see a tape and they feel like they can bank on that enough or they can decide from that, then I guess that'll be enough to go on. But I had a similar, I went in and met the casting director, Suzanne Smith, and I taped for it. And about maybe 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, I can't remember, I got told that they really liked my tape and I was, I was in the mix. And then about a week later, I got told I had the part. So,
did you specifically go for that role?
I specifically went, I auditioned for it in the very beginning, before, like, when they were auditioning for it at first. And actually, I went in for, I auditioned for Murta, strangely enough.
Right.
And I guess obviously that was before the cast, before the cast things. It depends who they get for certain roles. And when they get for certain roles, then that's going to affect the rest of the casting. Because Sam's playing younger than he actually is as well, isn't he? I think Jamie in the books is, 22 or something?
He's young, yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, I think that's obviously worked out for the best. How that all panned out. And and then a few months later, I got a phone call from my agent and said they wanted to see me for, the casting director wanted to see me for Ian Murray. And funnily enough, when I read the description of Ian Murray and kind of what he was about, I felt like I can't think of another way to say this without sounding wanky, but I felt like I kind of connected to the part, and that it could have been a good fit. So I was delighted when I got the part.
Now, you shared most of your scenes with the characters of Claire, Jamie and Jenny.
Yep.
What was it like working with Kat, Sam and Laura? Who would you say you best bonded with?
I actually, to be honest, I hate all of them, and maybe this is a time to say it. I think they're all
get it off your chest.
I think they're all total dicks. And my favourite person I worked with was the donkey. actually.
Is that the one that Gary Lewis used to sit on?
Was it Gary Lewis's donkey? Used to ride in on to try and get his
bandy legs.
Bowdy, is that a word? Bowdy legs?
Bandy.
I know I said bowdy though. I don't know.
Bowley, isn't it?
Bowley, maybe.
You get bowley legs.
I mean, I suppose you can say anything, and essentially, you know, if you say it enough times, it gets into the dictionary, does it not, apparently?
So it seems these days.
Anyway, yeah. In all honesty, it was brilliant. I knew Sam and Laura a little bit from before, and Sam was 2 years below me at drama school, and I didn't know him very well, to be honest. I knew him to say hello to and stuff, but I always thought he was a really nice guy, and he was very tall and very handsome and kind of looked like a superhero or something, but I didn't really know him that well. Laura started my drama school the year I left, and so I had a couple of friends in her year, and I knew her a little bit as well, and you know, it crossed paths a couple of times over the years. And I didn't know Katrina at all, but Katrina actually, weirdly, is really good friends with a really good friend of mine who lives in LA. So we kind of had a, you know, connection there as well. And so right from the offset, it was just really easy and really good fun. I had really good fun filming with them all. I really bonded with Sam, and in terms of playing Jamie's best friend, you know, that stuff was just so easy. We had a really good instant rapport, I think, and a lot of laughter. And being that most of our scenes, obviously some of the scenes were pretty emotional and pretty heavy as well, but it just made it all a lot easier and a lot more fun. It's every set that you work on is different, and sometimes when things are really tense, that can work as well. But I personally find that I work better when I'm, you know, really enjoying it and getting on with everyone, and you feel safe to play and explore, and it was fantastic. I absolutely loved working with them.
What were your favourite scenes to shoot?
The two of my favourite scenes that spring to mind straight away, the cart scene.
Uh-huh.
Remember where Jamie and I are around the cart? I mean, that was an incredible... We were filming that day, and I thought, people in America are going to think they've CGI'd the sky in Scotland. It was so
glorious. Yeah. God,
it was absolutely unbelievable. And it was just, it kind of felt like being on a... That was the thing about Outlander as well. It feels like being on a film set as opposed to being on a TV set. So the production values are so incredible, and they did a really beautiful crane shot set up. And Metin Hussein was directing that episode as well, who I absolutely loved working with. And Sam and I it took us a while to do that scene at first. Actually, Sam and I could not stop corpsing. And, you know, we were pretending to fix the cart. So we were doing some, you know, fixing the cart acting, which was just, you know, making the pair of us piss ourselves like immature little boys. But it was a great... I what was going on in the scene as well, and I thought for the character's story, I thought it told a lot, and it served the story really well, and it served their story really well, and I felt like it was a really nice moment between Ian and Jamie, and it showed a lot of, you know, what had gone on in the years preceding and how close they were.
Yeah.
And the other scene was the scene where I kill Horrocks for Jamie. And I actually felt like I learned a lot about acting that day as well, because Metin Hussein, when we were going to film that scene beforehand, I kind of saw that scene very differently on the page as opposed to how we actually ended up doing it.
Sure.
And Metin had quite a different idea from the idea that I had. And I just, you know, I was a bit, I wasn't necessarily on the same page as him at first, but I went with it. And I think like what we did ended up working really, really well and much, much better than the idea that I had. And, you know, it's important sometimes to just really trust the director, I think, and see that they, you know, they see a different, they can see it differently.
Yeah, they've got a different vision, yeah.
Yeah, completely. When you're in it, it's sometimes a bit more difficult to be objective. And I thought it was, it's always weird watching yourself, but I thought it worked really well. And again, I thought it was a really nice bonding moment with Jamie.
Sure.
And I loved Lachlan O'Meara as well, who played Horrox. He was such a nice guy, so it was quite good fun stabbing him in the back as well.
Now we have a question from Twitter from Beverly Schaefer in Carlisle. Beverly Schaefer from Carlisle in Pennsylvania.
Oh wow!
Do you know that name?
Do you know, I don't, I was joking, but...
the Beverly Schaefer.
The Beverly Schaefer. That character that I played in Cabaret was from Pennsylvania, actually.
Really?
Funnily enough, yeah. So...
Well, Beverly would like to know what projects you have coming up.
I've got three things that will be coming out in the next year. I did a film at the start of the year called... Oh, hold on a minute, I'm just going to let... my cat out. She wants out. There you go. I did a film at the start of the year called The Titan with Sam Worthington and Taylor Schilling and Tom Wilkinson.
Mm-hmm.
Sci-fi film set in the near future. That'll be out. I don't know if that'll be out this year or next year, actually, because there's probably quite a lot of CGI they need to do on that. So maybe that'll be out later on in the year.
What's it called again?
It's called The Titan.
The Titan, right? Okay.
Titan, yeah. Which is very exciting, I think. I did a film just before that called Brotherhood,
mm-hmm.
which is a film of, you know, have you heard of Kidulthood and
Adulthood? Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah, the Noel Clarke films. I've worked with Noel a couple of times, and Brotherhood is the final one.
Oh, is it?
Trilogy. Yeah.
He's a fantastic actor, Noel. I think he's fantastic.
He's great. I love Noel.
He's a good baddie.
Yeah, he does, and he's also, his work ethic and what he's done in the last 10 years and the career he's created for himself and mm-hmm. his output is just absolutely incredible. And in an industry where it's so hard, and a lot of people, including myself, you know, sometimes just sit around waiting for things to happen, the fact that he, you know, just got off his arse and... wrote and created his own work is to be very much admired.
My earliest memory of Noel was in Ophidor's End Pet. That was the first thing I remember him in, was when he sort of replaced was it Gary Holton, I think was the name of the actor.
Right. Well, funnily enough, he said when he was on Ophidor's End Pet and when he was coming off that, he realised that if he wanted to have a film career and he wanted to play leads in films and stuff, he was going to have to do it himself. And so that's when he started thinking about writing, and that's when he wrote Kidulthood. So
incredible.
Absolutely.
A great inspiration for people listening out there. Anything is possible, you know, chase your dreams.
And loads of people, if you look at Noel's films over the years as well, over the years there's a lot of really good actors that have worked in Noel's stuff who have then gone on to, you know, become either household names or have like fantastic careers. And I think he's particularly as well because he makes films like Kidulthood and Adulthood and Brotherhood for a demographic that don't really have films made for them as well.
Mm-hmm. We interviewed the whole cast, almost the entire cast of Band of Brothers, which was a massive, massive cast. It took us two years to interview them, and we've still got about three or four still to
interview Mark Warren by chance.
We did, yes.
Mark Warren's one of my best mates.
Really, Mark? Yeah, Mark. Yeah. Mark was on the show. He played Blythe in Band of Brothers.
Yeah.
It's incredible the amount of small parts in Band of Brothers, actors who had small parts have grown. Michael Fassbender, Tom Hardy,
McAvoy,
all had small parts in Band of Brothers and went on to become big stars.
Andrew Scott
as well. It's just incredible.
Absolutely, completely. Yeah.
Well, Stephen, thank you very much for joining us on the show. We appreciate your time and we wish you all the best with your future projects.
Fantastic, thank you very much.
Now, before you go, I would like you to choose the next song that we play. What would you like to hear?
Right, well, it's going to be quite a random one, actually. And I can't, it's not necessarily my favourite song. It's one of my favourite songs ever, but it's maybe a little bit obscure to some of the listeners, but it means a lot to me. It's a song from Jesus Christ Superstar.
Okay.
And as I said to you in the interview, I'm a big musicals fan.
Yeah.
And the film that really made me want to be an actor was the film of Jesus Christ Superstar. And my favourite song from it is the song that Jesus sings halfway through the film called Gethsemane, or I Only Want to Say.
Interesting choice.
Yeah. And I actually met Ted Neely a couple of years ago, who played Jesus in it, who was like my all-time hero.
Wow.
And I met him. And I have to say, you know, they say, like, there's that expression, they say you should never meet your heroes.
Yeah, yeah.
No, in this case, actually, that wasn't the case. He was amazing. And it was a really incredible experience getting to meet him.
Fantastic. Okay, we'll play the Ted Neely version right now for you. Before we finish, I'd just like to give a shout out, if you don't mind saying hello, to Susan Smith Finn in Wisconsin, one of the world's biggest Outlander fans.
Hello, Susan from Wisconsin. I hope you're well today, and I hope Wisconsin is sunny, and I hope you're loving season 2 of Outlander.
Thanks again, Stephen.
Thanks, Ross. Take care.
The Ross Owen Show is sponsored by ddayhistorian.com.